The student newspaper at the University of Notre Dame recently ran an unusual staff editorial on the front page. It took up most of the front page, right above the fold, and of course it was featured prominently on their online newsletter and website. The headline read, AI Proof the Curriculum. The editorial was unusual because it was calling on the administration to revamp all the courses in the university's core curriculum. These student editors were arguing that the core curriculum, which is a set of courses in things like philosophy and religious studies, and which every undergrad is required to take, they're saying that core curriculum, it just isn't working anymore because of the rise of AI chatbots.
Why would these students read 80 pages of Socratic dialogues for a discussion group when a few hundred-word summary from Gemini will do? As of now, the responsibility to forego AI lies with individual students, but to expect students to always restrain themselves from doing so is naive. Often, what occurs is that some dedicated students actually do the difficult work asked of them, while others float by with the help of AI. Students who rightly choose to complete their work in line with their professor's AI policies should not be penalized for their academic honesty. AI should not only be prohibited in their lower-level courses students most often take to fulfill their core requirements. These classes should also be restructured to make AI use functionally impossible. Assignments should be formulated in such a way that students cannot use artificial intelligence tools in substantive ways.
That is Redmond Bernhold. He's the opinion editor for Notre Dame student newspaper, which is called The Observer. He co-wrote that front page editorial, which ran in October. I was excited to connect with this student editor, apparently folks call him Reddy, to hear more about his argument. Because these days, you see lots of articles in the national press about college students who are happy to cheat on their homework with ChatGPT and Gemini and other tools. But this seemed like a case of a group of students saying, please, make us work harder. We need to learn these basics for ourselves.
We want more out of our education. And yeah, if that means working harder and sitting down and reading 100 pages of Socrates, then so be it. But I think, yeah, it's about reinforcing what it means to be here at Notre Dame and what it means to get an education. I know there's a lot of discussion among especially entry-level positions about if a college degree is necessary, and higher education is in a massive crisis right now. So to have a top 20 degree from no matter what college it is, it means a lot, and we need to reinforce that narrative.
Hello and welcome to Learning Curve, an exploration of what it means to teach and learn in the age of generative AI. I'm Jeff Young. Today we are diving into this issue that Reddy and his fellow undergrads are raising about whether the core curriculum on campuses across the country needs to be shored up to make sure students are learning the basics of reading, writing, math, and basically thinking. Can these required courses be AI-proofed? And will universities like Notre Dame make these changes that the students are calling for? So Reddy is a senior, and he is majoring in biochemistry and minoring in journalism. And he's hoping to go into maybe business reporting. He's going to be graduating in just a few months. So this issue of whether his degree is perceived as valuable by employers, it's very pressing. And when I asked him how the student editors decided to write this editorial, I learned that plenty of other students on his campus share his concerns.
The editorial board, me and the other top editors of this newspaper, have always thought AI is such an interesting topic here at Notre Dame's campus because the main policy instituted among the whole entire campus is a blanket statement basically saying that it's up to each individual professor and that ultimately the student has the right to know that their work cannot be substituted for AI. And that's pretty much it. There's no other details and there's no other university response to something that's so palpable. I mean, you go walking around the library or any other academic building and you see chatbots pulled up on nearly I would say, half of the computers. I mean, it's everywhere. And so as an editorial board, we were kind of discussing this topic for a couple of weeks, and we recognized that the university doesn't have much they can do in terms of a policy. And because, as the editorial mentions, there is room in STEM for learning about AI. So adding something to blanket all students of all disciplines is really difficult. And so the point of the discussion that we sort of found ourselves drawn to was the core curriculum, because that's something no student can escape here. It's something that is inherent and makes Notre Dame very distinct. You know, we take 2 philosophy classes, 2 theology courses, and a bunch of other requirements to make ourselves have the Catholic education.
Yeah, this is a key part of why you chose Notre Dame, probably, right?
Yeah. And a lot of the times we're seeing AI use, as I've seen in your podcast, and I think this is holding true in Notre Dame too, is that a lot of students use it in courses that they feel like don't pertain to them or that aren't important to their career. And because the core curriculum inherently makes you take courses that don't align with what you want to do in your future, it's important to keep that robust and to keep that a part of why you're here. And so the point of the editorial was to double down on that and to say, we need to make these a bit more rigorous. We need to have more fruitful discussion where AI cannot penetrate the dialogue that's happening in these classes, because it's supposed to be meaningful. You're supposed to take something away. And right now, we're not seeing much of that.
Basically, you're saying, like, I'm just going to put it this way and then push back if I'm wrong. But it's almost like you have invested your time and energy, and you got in, and somebody's paying for this experience. You don't want it to be threatened, the reputation destroyed, as if people are just soon perceived as just phoning it in for part of why it's special.
I feel that's exactly right. I mean, someone ultimately paid $320,000 for these Notre Dame students to be here. And we need to make sure that we're getting the most out of that, and that we chose the school ultimately. So we need to keep that in mind. And I don't know.
It's funny because I love your own major. It seems like it blends STEM and humanities, right? I mean, a lot of people double major. Why do you think it's important to have the core curriculum? Like, how do you see it? If not, because there is that perception that I heard at the University of Minnesota over and over again of like, I don't need this. If I'm going to be a sports management major, why do I have to take up a geography course or geology or whatever it was? Saying like, I know that I don't need this. I'm phoning out of it. I'm going to chatbot it. So what is your case to that student and other students of like, why should you need these courses in philosophy and theology?
Yeah. So one of the earliest times that I was at Notre Dame, I was in this class called Moreau, which is standard for all Notre Dame first years to take. And this quote kept coming up, and it's something that Notre Dame family grader takes in very personally. And the quote is, "The mind will not be cultivated at the expense of the heart." And that is, I think, part of like why the curriculum is the way it is. We are ultimately trying to be educated not in Catholicism, but in a Catholic education, which means the scope of humanities and STEM, and also virtue. I think virtue is one of the biggest things that makes Notre Dame so distinct from other top colleges. We learn what it means to be a good person, where our place is in society, and among all of those, service is a big thing that a lot of students take with them outside of here, which is great. So it's this massive blend of what it means to be fruitful in society and to have a clear direction once we leave South Bend, Indiana.
Yeah. So you buy it. Like, you want this, right?
Yeah. AI proofing the core curriculum, to me, yeah, I think it's a great idea. I think the core curriculum forces a lot of students into departments that they wouldn't find themselves in otherwise. And I know that's true for me, and that I probably would not have taken a philosophy course if it weren't for the core requirement. But I have ultimately picked up more philosophy classes since I've taken it. I found it to be an interesting topic that I resonate with. But I know a lot of people I talk to and some of my friends also see it as a burden sometimes where they're packing their schedules in for 18 credits and 19 credits for the core curriculum. And I think now as students, it can be very difficult to see how it's beneficial outside of Notre Dame because we're seeing it just as something we have to be in and complete rather than something we can take from and take meaning out of, substantive meaning out of. And yeah, I think it'll translate well into the real world. It's just very difficult for students to see that outside of Notre Dame. But my dad, who went here, has told me a lot about how his requirements and how his theology and philosophy classes, though he was a business major, were one of the most meaningful ones he's had.
This student newspaper editorial got the attention of lots of people on campus, especially faculty members. Because as we have covered in this podcast, lots of professors are worried about these issues too, about whether students are really learning these days and whether AI could be an existential threat to higher ed. In fact, one professor at Notre Dame who read that editorial, he felt so moved that he reposted it on LinkedIn with his own commentary about it. That professor, his name is David Griffith. He teaches English at Notre Dame. And he wrote on LinkedIn, "I applaud the editors, and I think what they're calling for is absolutely reasonable and achievable."
It was reasonable. I think it's a reasonable thing to be worried about. I think it's a reasonable thing to be concerned about. And I thought it was a reasonable request for the students to make of the faculty and of the university. And because I don't think, I didn't read that editorial as saying, hey, make everything fair, right? I guess you could read it that way. I was reading it as, especially toward the end of the editorial, I was reading it as the purpose of a liberal arts education is to help shape us as human persons. And, you know, we're losing out or missing out on that if the work that we're assigned and the courses, you know, that we are, you know, being offered can be completed in this, you know, it can be completed by, you know, chatbot, right?
Yeah.
Which I read as, and I don't think they really get into specifics in the argument, but what I read as a kind of indictment of the kinds of work that they're being asked to do in these courses, right? As an academic advisor, which is kind of half of my role here at the university, I talk to students all the time about the general education courses, which we call part of the core curriculum that they have to take. So for example, students in the humanities who are required, they're still required to take a science and technology course. They're still required to take a mathematics course, right, to graduate. Yeah, you could, if you wanted to, based on what I'm hearing from a lot of the students, you could use ChatGPT or the like to do the work for you.
Yeah, there's a lot of tools.
Yeah. And what would you learn? You know, and so that's how I read the editorial, is that, you know, here are the students who are in the midst of it or experiencing it every day, and they're asking for an education. That's what they're asking for, right? They're not being asked, hey, just punch my ticket, you know, so I can get on to the next level of credentialing, which a cynical view of higher education, you know, would kind of see it that way. And I'm not saying that there aren't still, you know, aspects of higher education that are like that. But that's what I see them asking for, is like, please, you know, hold us to this higher standard. Provide us with the kind of education that the mission of the university, you know, is dedicated to.
This professor noted that he didn't see the argument as so much about fairness. But when I asked Reddy about that, about whether for him this is about making sure students are being fairly measured for the work they're doing, he had a different take.
I mean, personally, it's definitely about fairness, because I've been in the situation where I go to complete assignments without AI and then I see classmates who do, and sometimes they do get the higher grade. And it is a bit, in the moment, a bit sad, but I think it's something that's not just particular to here too. I know a friend who goes to another top 20 who completed a French essay, and she did it completely on her own. And then one of her friends at the same college did the same assignment with the help of AI. I don't know if AI was completely writing it or just generating ideas or what AI's role was, but the friend of a friend got an A and my friend got a B+. And she was taken back from it because it was something she had been working on for weeks and it's this major assignment. And so we're seeing this come up more and more because students are also finding ways to circumvent how it can be detected in assignments and using it for things that don't translate into being scanned, because ultimately all assignments would be scanned through Canvas to see if AI has been used. So we're seeing it more so for how things are constructed or idea generation and stuff like that, which can be pretty hard to trace. And that is square, since it's square one in the process of these assignments and taking something away from the class, you're seeing it just completely hinder all virtue and value of what it means to be in the core curriculum. So some of it's fairness, but it also comes back to the value of the Catholic education here.
I see. So it's both.
Yeah, for sure.
It's so funny. I feel like you underplayed that. And I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I mean, that must feel like hard to, you were said like mildly frustrating or disappointing or whatever, but in a way, like, I mean, this has not been a thing before, right? Like when I went to college, I took a philosophy class, but there was not a ChatGPT at all. Like it was not a possibility. So everybody's like, but I can imagine a real like being upset, like emotionally frustrated by that. I don't know.
Yeah, I've been deeply upset at it at times for sure. I think especially in classes where where I find myself really interested in the topic and something that I'm pursuing in my future, for example, a journalism class, but students who are just taking it as this sort of elective or not taking it as seriously as they should be can bypass with AI faster and maybe with a higher grade. And it's really troubling in the moment. And I have been very frustrated by it, but I think it's maybe become a desensitizing topic where I just have seen it so much and I've heard about it so much that it's just something I've come to reckon with and to live with. And yeah, I think fairness is a big issue with this.
And why can't, I guess, this is going to just sound like, just take the question as like not a judgment by me because I'm just the middle person. But, you know, why can't students just do the right thing themselves?
Yeah, it comes back again to the question of optimizing time. And I know students have said that on your podcast before. And I think that's probably the biggest motif I've seen with the use in higher education is that students want to designate their time away from the busy work or the assignments that they can feel like they can complete really easily. And I think they often use AI to complete those busy work assignments, those ones that aren't massive projects. And in turn, maybe they're not learning stuff along the way, and they're likely not. So when they go to these bigger projects and these larger portions of their grade, you know, they probably will return to AI because if they couldn't learn something through the class and up until midterms or up until the final, they're likely not going to be able to do the final thing at hand. And it's just been something really interesting we've seen play out across since my freshman spring and now as a senior in my fall semester. It's really amplified and escalated to, you know, I use AI, but not in the ways that I'm seeing those around me. You know, I use it to scan to make sure I didn't miss an Oxford comma or to do these little tasks. So there is some value in the humanities, but yeah, I it comes back to the question of busy work and the value of busy work.
Yeah, I mean, David Griffith called it an indictment. He read the article, the opinion piece you wrote, you co-wrote, as an indictment of the faculty of these courses. If they could be done by chatbot, then it's that's a problem. That it is a failure of the faculty. Is that fair?
Yeah, the last line of the editorial mentions that this is an institutional failure if it's not adequately addressed, and that if students were to go away from this campus without having a Catholic education and holding this core curriculum to the value of the outside world, it is a failure. So I agree with that. I think it's largely what makes Notre Dame Notre Dame.
After the break, what is Notre Dame already doing to try to AI-proof courses in the core curriculum? And what is the administration's response to this student editorial? Stay with us. Hey, everybody. I wanted to tell you about another podcast that I think you'll enjoy. College Matters from The Chronicle. College Matters is a weekly show from The Chronicle of Higher Education, and it's a great resource for news and analysis about colleges and universities. The host, Jack Stripling, is my former colleague at The Chronicle, who has covered and investigated higher ed for 2 decades. Jack really knows his stuff, and I think you'll get a kick out of his conversations with reporters and newsmakers. So check out College Matters on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Now back to the episode. Not surprisingly, the professors and leaders at Notre Dame, they were already thinking hard about these issues, about how to respond to generative AI. In fact, Dave Griffith is working on an experimental course for freshmen that really does address this AI question.
It's called the Hypatia Scholars Program. It's a program that students, incoming students to the university, apply to. This is the first year of the program. The eligibility is that you have to be majoring in a STEM field. So sciences, engineering, psychology, neuroscience, and you also have to be very interested in the humanities. So thinking about the ways in which the humanities and the sciences are in conversation with one another.
There are only 45 students in this program, divided into 3 sections. So that means each class is just 15 students, so they can have an intimate discussion. The title of the class is Nature, Technology, and Humanity: Artificial Intelligence and the Soul. And the reading list includes Plato's Phaedrus, Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, and a more recent sci-fi book on AI, Clara and the Sun by Kazuo Ishiguro. You might remember that book actually came up on episode 2 of this podcast series. Dave is teaching one of the sections of the course, and he sent me the full syllabus. And I was really struck by the course policies around AI use. You require the students to buy a printed book, the same copy. And when I was in school, there were definitely like, and when I was in college, there was like, buy the right edition so we can be on the same page. But you're very clear in this on, or you and your co-teachers are, make sure you get the printed copy, and for the readouts that are on PDF on the Canvas system, print them out and bring them. Why this focus on print?
Yeah, well, I think the first reason, and this, I'm just going to speak for myself for a second, is that the engagement with the physical enhances retention, right? There's been lots of studies over the years about, for example, note-taking. Physical note-taking, pen, paper, pencil, and paper, is a way of making concrete. Right. Making it stick is a phrase that you hear sometimes, and people have, you know, talked a lot about how do you make it stick as an educator. But that's
for
the
sure.
thing is marking up the text, annotating the text. This is yours. Leave your indelible print upon it. Even if you return to it 25 years later and look at your marginalia and say, oh my gosh, what was I thinking? I was such a baby. Yeah, well, sure, that's inevitable.
But I think I've done that with some of the books that my shelf. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So what we're saying to the students is that this is a tried and true method for engagement, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So we're not just passing our eyes over words, right? But we're actually, and this is the way that I think about it and talk to my students about it. But in some cases, we're actually, if you could, much like someone running a printing press, you're actually picking up each word and setting it down. You're weighing each word. You're thinking about the order of the words in the sentence, right? You're not just thinking about, you know, it's paraphrasable, you know, meaning or a summary that, you know, the AI could do for you, right? In fact, whenever I download a PDF onto my computer, Adobe pops open and says, hey, would you like me to summarize this for you? And it's so tempting to say, right. Yes, please. please take this burden from me, you know? And so we're really just creating a situation where the students are being given permission to engage in the process of reading in the way that I think authors intend their work to be considered, right? At least all the writers that I know, right?
Yeah, and it does get to a theme that's emerging in this podcast so far is like a wrestling with, it's come up in a couple episodes, AI summary tools. Like, for instance, Notebook LM, which will ingest, if I had the PDF version of a book, throw it in there. I talked about this in my last episode, and then have a recent episode of like, it'll give me a 12-minute podcast by bots giving me the highlights. And it sounds like you literally say on this syllabus, that is not allowed in this class.
Yeah. I mean, we are allowing in very targeted, explicit ways for them to experiment with AI chatbots. And
for other assignments, right?
Right. Yeah. For example, I just came out of a meeting with a student before we jumped on Zoom here. This is a student who came in to talk about the revision of her midterm essay, in which she's writing about Frankenstein's monster, and she's writing about whether or not Frankenstein's monster is human. And how could we make that? And is there a way that we could actually make that argument, right? Is there any evidence in the text for that? And, you know, I won't get into all the other details of it, but one of the things that came out of that conversation is the student said, well, maybe I'll kind of engage in a little bit of a Turing test to see, because we had read Alan Turing's, you know, seminal article, you know, on machine learning.
Right, to test whether a machine is human or...
Right, capable of presenting or tricking us, as it were, into deceiving us into believing that it's human or...
Mm-hmm.
And she said, maybe I'll do a Turing test. I'll ask, you know, ChatGPT or Gemini, I'm going to construct something here using this tool. And I was like...
Yeah, so basically test the character of Frankenstein as presented in the text of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, and then run it into something that's like a AI judge of humanness, so to speak, or like whether it would pass a Turing test.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I said, I don't know what's going to come of that, but I love the idea. Go for it. Experiment with it. And I think that that's the spirit in which we should be in institutions of higher education, encouraging students to engage with these tools. We should be asking them to be curious about it. We should be asking them to, you know, to be judicious.
No, that's a cool idea. But not, but back to my question, but it is in the syllabus not to run that through, like, it's like prohibited, so to speak, of running the text through Notebook LM to have it make a podcast summary.
Yeah, in so many words, we're saying, look, this is the way that we're going to come to an understanding of the text, right? Is that you're going to read it on your own, that we're going to get together and we're going to talk about it, you know, as a group. And really, I mean, the way that I would put it is that we're highlighting the communal nature of reading, which used to be much more prevalent in our reading culture, right? Is that you would read, you know, books in community. Right. It wouldn't be just this, I'm going to put my headphones in and listen to the Audible version. Not that there's anything wrong with that. But the communal nature of knowledge making, for example, right? Knowledge is something that we create together often as communities. We have this whole notion, mythological, you know, kind of notion that great ideas only come from singular geniuses.
So what do you think it will take to do? It's not just your own institution. As you know, this is a national effort I'm doing here. So this show, what do you think it will take for universities to respond to that, to do that? If some may already, you know, be heading in that direction, what will it take to get the change that these students are asking for?
That's a great question. I mean, there's been such a there's been such a campaign over, I think, the last 20 years to discredit institutions of higher education, you know, not to get too partisan political here, but this has been a campaign, you know, on the part of one party, really, to discredit what institutions of higher education do. And I understand that there are lots of important there's lots of important reasons to try to consider fairness and to try to consider multiple perspectives on an issue. I get that. That if we are not, we are falling down on our job as being institutions of higher education and learning, right? That is for sure. But I think what it's going to take, to answer your question, is it's going to take a real crisis of faith, if we're not already there, a real crisis of faith on the part of the public in terms of what is that diploma worth, right?
Yeah.
What is that piece of paper that says that you have earned a bachelor's of arts in whatever, or a bachelor of science, right? Or a bachelor's of business administration or whatever it is, right?
You've got that four-year degree.
What is, that there's a crisis of, you know, that says we don't really think that it's worth anything, right? Because all of the work has been done by a machine, right? So what does it really mean that you, it means that you chilled for 4 years and had fun with your friends? I mean, I'm hearing horror stories from friends that work at other institutions that it is entirely possible to do that. So I think it is going to take that, that sort of absolute lack of faith on the part of, you know, the public in, you know, higher education. And I think in some sectors of American society, it's already gone.
So this course that David is teaching, it was designed before these students wrote that editorial, but I think it would qualify as what they mean by AI proof. As I talked more with this professor, I realized that he was driven to write that response on LinkedIn because these issues are deeply personal for him.
I was once where they are. I was once working for that same newspaper, actually, when I was a student at Notre Dame. I worked as a writer for the Observer.
And cool.
I just kind of feel like it's my duty to pick up the newspaper when it comes out, read through it, and take the student seriously, because that's the other thing that I think, and this doesn't come into the editorial, but like the paranoia that it creates, that things like AI and ChatGPT and Gemini and all these things create amongst faculty, is that it's like, well, how do we know that the student's actually doing this work? How do we know that this is their work, right? It calls into question, you know, intellectual integrity, you know, completely. And so in that way, this is going to be, I hope, and thank you for taking interest in the question. This kind of conversation is going to happen between the students and the faculty and the administrators of the university. We're going to get through this as a community, you know, and I think other institutions are going to have to figure it out, you know, for themselves. But I don't know. This is a good first step, at least, is that the students are desiring it. We're listening to them. We're coming back to the table and said, well, what about this? How does this, how does this sound? How does this feel? You know?
Okay, so there are a few experiments at Notre Dame. But what has been the official university response to the students' editorial? I wanted to talk with someone directly involved with planning the core curriculum to see what they say about this call to AI proof it. So I connected with Mark McCready, who is co-chair of the core curriculum in undergraduate education. He's also a professor of chemical and biomolecular engineering.
Well, I can certainly say that the large language models and the way they interact with students is a concern for our educational process. And for sure, we need to adapt what we do in light of these models and of these tools. The thought that I could AI proof anything would mean I would have to, at a surprise moment, confront a student verbally away from everybody else and start asking questions. And then I could find out what you can do without any help and without any, you know, pre-planning. But as far as structuring a whole course in such a way as to AI-proof the course, that sounds pretty much impossible.
I see. Another, and let me just understand you. You mean like doing a kind of oral exam that would do it, is what you mean?
Yeah, like I could find out what you know in an oral exam. But I can also find, for engineering, I teach engineering, and we've always had, closed book tests in classrooms and final exams. And so all of the testing, as far as what did you learn kind of questions, it doesn't really need to change for us. In that sense, how, you know, what tools you use outside and how I interact. I want to interact better outside of class and in class so that you can use the tools more effectively to learn more. But that's, I mean, again, that's in some sense confined to the narrow fields where we basically do in-class tests. But going back to sort of the more fundamental question here is, could I restructure the core curriculum in such a way that it would be AI proof? And again, I'm pretty much back. If we were teaching theology, I still don't see how I can AI proof it, other than you have to come to class and write something or answer something completely without any chance of outside tools. And my colleagues in the humanities would tell you that, you know, this long form writing where you analyze a problem, you think about it, you make an outline of your ideas, you do some writing, you get feedback from the instructor, you try some more things. And then at the end of the day, you produce this final project, which may be, you know, 20, 30 pages or something, is really essential to developing your thinking in these fields. It's both what you understand of the existent knowledge and how you synthesize it yourself. And so that can't all be done in just a 50-minute or hour and 15-minute essay in class. I mean, that's got to be something that's a multi-week project. And so, trying to get students to do some kind of a pledge that I will not take any information from the outside, well, that's sort of ridiculous given all of the things that the world gives you. I mean, we've all been Googling things for almost a decade, right? So we get that. And then 2 or 3 years ago, or maybe 5 years ago, you know, they would just check your syntax and your grammar. And now, of course, it'll rewrite your paper. But so those tools have been developing over the past decade or so. And so I see them as tools to make us better educators and the students better learners, and then ultimately better productive citizens, right? So our challenge is to do that, not try to find ways to prevent students from using the tools that exist.
No, I love the practicality. Your engineering mindset's coming through there. I can feel it. Of like, well, you know, if the goal is to have this like deep thinking that a 6 week long project or some number of weeks would let a student mull over and write an essay. That's the old way. That's the dream. And the way it was before these tools could do that for you, could write a paper that looked passable. So, but I did see I did also hear, you might have seen this, there was a LinkedIn post by an English professor there, David Griffiths, who noted that he argued that what they are calling for is absolutely reasonable and achievable. And I think he's involved with an experiment there not in the whole core curriculum, but some classes that he doesn't allow, you know, any AI use in for, and they're encouraging some AI experimentation, but they don't allow, they make everybody buy print books and they print out the PDFs of things. So they're trying to find experimental ways to alter assignments to, and so I guess I do wonder if maybe we don't know the answer yet, but if this call to like do something to find a new way to make it so it's not just a pledge that the students have to take or that they have to just stop themselves, but that there's some new assignment model that comes out of this that tries to address it. Do you think there's a way to reform the curriculum in some way based on AI?
Well, I mean, I can say for sure there's dozens to hundreds of faculty at Notre Dame thinking about this problem, which means there's tens of thousands to hundreds of thousands of faculty in the world thinking about this problem. And if some, magic ideas emerged, they would spread pretty quickly.
Mm.
I think. Now, one of the things that, you know, that we were discussing at our core curriculum meeting the other day, people were talking about ideas they were doing. And, you know, one of the things was that you could take the writing tool, make them use all input into Gemini in a certain way that it would track all your changes, all the things you put in, all the things that over time, when it was time stamped, everything like this. So it made it look like you thought of something, you revised it, you got feedback on it, you revised it again, and you could get the whole time stamp. And so for 6 weeks that works, but it turns out there's already a tool that exists to fake that for you. So that, you know,
wow.
You know, so it was good for one semester, but it's not.
Mark McCready is talking about a method to prevent AI cheating that is often called process tracking, where professors ask students to use systems to write their papers that let professors go back through versions of the documents to see when the student entered each bit of information. If you've ever used the version history on Google Docs, that could work. And this is something that some professors around the country have been trying to AI-proof their courses. I actually wrote about this trend about a year ago when I worked at EdSurge. I'll put the link in the show notes. And I learned at the time that some professors are kind of worried about this idea because it sends this message that they don't trust their students. And new tools have been coming out that defeat the process tracking by using AI to simulate typing character by character so that the version history looks human even when it's done by a bot.
You know, I mean, at that point, at some point, you know, you could say the students really are cheating. And that would be one where I'd say, look, if you're trying to circumvent this time stamping thing, that would, in fact, be cheating. And so, you know, we wouldn't expect that that would be everybody would do it. But it still doesn't solve the problem, right? No, the thing that I've been telling visitors to Notre Dame from the time I was chair until now, I would say, you know, some of the things we do in engineering and chemical engineering, we pose very complicated situations that involve very deep thinking, and we work through them. And I don't care if you ever use it in your career, you benefit from thinking about hard problems and reaching your own solutions. So that statement that I make, I can have that happen other ways. But that's not necessary. That's like a something that occurs over a week or something. And again, it doesn't really address the problems in the humanities, where it's something that you'd like them to synthesize ideas over a much longer time period. But nevertheless, that's kind of what I think, because I think you can improve your sort of, you know, thinking and mental capabilities by doing this kind of thing. Maybe I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure I'm right.
I'm hearing that you actually see benefits to having AI tools kind of enhance the kind of things that the core curriculum has done well in the past, if in the future.
Oh yeah, no, I would hope so. If you look at the core curriculum, obviously it's fundamental to Notre Dame. It covers a wide, you know, variety of subjects, especially the ones that you don't major in, right? So if you're a theology major again, then you're fine in theology, philosophy, those kinds of things. But you may take one science, one math course or something like that. And so so that's the place where I think these tools would be kind of important, even if you make a homework assignment where you use the tool to solve it. So if I'm doing integral calculus, and the current way is you go to class, you might read the book, you have a bunch of homework problems, and then you have basically a multiple choice test. And I can tell you that from engineers, when they were seniors, all of the years when I was teaching a course called Separation Processes, I would write down an integral that was essential to the subject, and I could find out that half the students didn't really understand what an integral was. Okay.
Ah, yeah, yeah.
Those were engineers. No, some of them, you know, I mean, they may have, at the time, they knew how to calculate the value of integrating x squared to be, you know, x cubed over 3. They could do things like that, but they didn't know that it really was the area under a curve if you drew the curve. And so what I could be doing with my AI tool, and you taking one of these fundamental subjects, I would ask these questions that you could use the tool to solve. But if you read what it wrote for you, it would write it in a way better than you would have probably got it from me just lecturing on the board. And then you're doing the homework when you're only half engaged. right? So I could think of assignments where I just simply assign you to use the tool and answer some questions. It seems like we could do something with Thomas Aquinas too, if we were, not my field, but you could be using the tool. And then for sure, when they leave here, if they want to be productive engineers, sociologists, humanists, or citizens of the world, that tool's there for them. And so we should definitely engage it intellectually in college, not just superficially. And so we want to make that tool the most useful for them in the future. That's what I'd like to see them do. So I think there's a lot of thinking. A lot of people are thinking about it, but I don't think it's, from a practical standpoint, just trying to keep it out. I just don't see how that's going to work.
Let me ask you this. You're in this, you referenced a meeting recently with the core curriculum. What has been the reaction? Has this student newspaper editorial like resonated? Has it been discussed at all? Or is it a feeling of like you were already doing things on this?
Well, when I saw the editorial, I sent it out to everybody in the committee. And so we started a discussion about the editorial, there's definitely faculty at the university are doing everything they possibly can to keep it out. That's fine. If you think that's going to work for you, that's fine. I don't see how it's going to happen across the curriculum. So it's problematic to many people and other people. Again, people have tried different ways of dealing with it. But I think from engineering, as an engineer, it's like, this is a new tool. I got to figure out how to use it in the best way possible. But that would be one extreme. And the other extreme is people saying, no matter what, I don't want them to use it. So all of those opinions are expressed, but across the board, whether you're on one side or the other, everybody's thinking about it. Right.
Right.
So what I'm hoping is some ideas start to emerge that are as basically best practices, right? I mean, I think that's where we are, is there's ways to deal with the situation in a very most effective way that I don't think we know yet.
It's just going to take time is what I'm hearing. There's not a way to just kind of, especially as the tools keep changing and as the landscape keeps changing, it's not as if, because I feel like it could be seen as like an indictment that you guys aren't doing your job as a university to kind of keep the curriculum guarded, but that's not the way you see it.
Well, I think it's essential that we keep the educational advancement of our students guarded. But I need to take the big picture view of it. And so, if I don't know, I don't know the answer to the best way to deal with it. And if I'm listening to anybody who's got ideas, because I think it's important, the way we would deal with it in engineering is going to be different from how you would deal with it in philosophy, I suspect. And this sure. This issue of writing, this is at the point of the spear with writing, because it's very clear that the major way we communicated to other people in our professional jobs was we wrote something. I mean, you're right. Lucky if you get to tell them things, right? And obviously, and there's an advantage to being really good at speaking and those kinds of things. And so there must have been along the way when we learned how to write, different people learned different things along the way. That's definitely a skill. And it's both the synthesis of the ideas as well as the, production of the text, right? Is grammatically correct, but also interesting to read. And so there's a whole bunch of skill involved there. And, if you take your chat and you give it some prompts, it does amazingly well. And even more, I would say, at technical things. Mm-hmm. Because one of the other courses I teach is the seniors, chemical engineers in the lab course. And we tell them, you can use all these tools, just tell us you use it. And, when they give me a report that's been completely overgone by chat, as a technical engineering report, it's pretty good. I can see how, when you do sort of other things, you can see the, industrial edges on the text. It doesn't sound like it, you can tell it's not written the same way. But in a technical writing, we're very much trying to get to the point efficiently. And so it's pretty good at that. It may have completely nonsense if the students gave it the wrong ideas. It's nonsense, but the actual technical writing is there. So it's really hard to figure out. The writing part to me is harder to figure out than the engineering part as using these tools, because I just think there's a way of thinking there that did grow from how we learned how to write. And if we don't do it, I think something's really going to be missing. I just don't know exactly what or how.
I have to say, I was surprised at how much this longtime scholar sounded pretty upbeat that professors and colleges are going to figure out new ways to teach and new ways to assess what students know to adjust to the presence of AI chatbots.
I mean, this is pretty exciting, actually. I've always embraced change. I mean, is an opportunity. You know, the new things have come along. I had a slide rule. I had a calculator when I first went to college that didn't have floating point in it. I had computers that I had punch cards.
Wow. You know,
and so I've enjoyed this, all of these new tools that we've gotten to do all the things we do better, and be able to be more efficient. And that's that's one of the things is this question about, can I use AI to grade something? Well, at some point you're going to ask faculty to be more efficient,
yeah,
because of the costs of everything. Right. And so at some point you would expect that faculty would have to use these other tools just for grading. So, I mean, obviously they're responsible at the end, but so there's going to be some changes here that are going to shake up a lot of people, a lot of different ways. And it just seems it's going to be fun.
So the students are not getting exactly what they want right away, but it sounds like they are being heard and that this process is just going to unfold slowly over time, even as these tools seem to come out faster and faster. I'd love to hear from you. If you have an interesting story to tell about AI in education, send me a note to jeff@learningcurve.fm. This has been Learning Curve. Please follow the podcast wherever you listen. And if you like the show, please share it with a friend or post about it on social media. You can also sign up for the free Learning Curve newsletter to get show notes and find out more about the topics that we cover. Just head over to learningcurve.fm. This episode was put together by me, Jeff Young. Our music is by Kamaku. And the art for this episode was generated using the AI tool Midjourney. We're going to be back in 2 weeks with another episode. Meanwhile, have a wonderful Thanksgiving holiday, and thank you for listening.